Now we talk about the first parameter or the first process called stance. Stance is who you are and what you are after. What do I think about myself in terms of my self-esteem? How do I look at myself? Do I see myself as worthy? Do I feel that I am worthy? Do I feel that I am a person whose people really don't bother? I don't think that I'm such a good person. Every one of us have got a self-concept. The self-concept tells me who I am to myself. First point to be noted. Now, who I am to myself is always happening within me. Now, others are seeing me and they see me differently. If I think that I'm no good, if my self-talk says that I'm no good, somebody says you're good, I may not really accept what the other person is saying. So, who you are is the first dimension. How you look at yourself. The second is about what you're after. What is it that you're looking for? What is it that you're seeking? How do you relate to the world outside? What's your view towards the world? This is what you're after. It's at the top of the of your, it's at the top, stance is at the top of your knowledge food chain. It is your most broad-based knowledge domain. The way I think, the way I develop my thinking process as I grow up, we create certain base with which we live. Multiple things we integrate in our thinking process to create a stance. And all those things put together creates who we are. In the childhood, I must have been bullied by some classmate of mine and I do not know how to fight back, so I'll start feeling scared and passive. And then when I go to the higher school, this passivity will make me develop a behavior in which I will always be in the background. As I go to the higher levels, to graduation levels and further down, this passivity will become my way of life. Right? Now, this particular thing becomes very strong and powerful way of coping with life for me. I'm just giving you an example. Somewhere, somebody in my school days bullied me. I was a victim of that. I carry that program and it replicates in different situations as I go up in life. I may get married and I may be very passive with my partner. She may be taking all the decisions. Further down, I'll have children and I'll be very passive. I'll just support them in whatever they need, but I'll be very passive in taking decisions and I will not allow myself to get into the storm. This might happen. Now, this example I'm giving you to make you realize that there are multiple things about you that has made up who you are, but there are few triggers that actually make you take a stance. The stance affects every part of your life. Every part of your life. That's why it's the most broad-based and very powerful at the top of your knowledge food chain, as we are saying. In it, you define who you are in your world and what you're trying to accomplish. If I start feeling that I've been bullied by this colleague of mine, this classmate of mine in school days, and if that program is strongly built in me, then as I progress, I'll be trying to accomplish what? I'll be trying to accomplish safety for myself, staying away from people bullying me, and my entire actions will be based on how not to get bullied. This happens in every part of your life, at the workplace, at home, in the social front, etc. So I will start creating behaviors which will be of that types. So once you see people who are having this, the behavior keeps replicating in different situations, right? Stance is how you see the world around you, but it's also about how you see yourself in that world. If I think I'm worth it, then when I go out in the open, in a shopping mall or in the roads, then I see that everything around me is worthy. If I think I'm worthless, then everything around me seems to be worthless. So these two are interconnected. What my ecology inside, the climate inside and the ecology outside, both are impacted by the way I take my stance. The world rocks if you think you're rocking. The world sucks if you think that the world is sucking. these two are interrelated. The way my vision is, I see the world. Right? Now, this is some point which we need to get in touch with. According to Jung, the world is a complicated place with an almost infinite number of branching paths to follow. There is always more than one way to succeed in any given situation. This is very nice and intellectual to understand, but many of us, we get stuck up with one way of doing things. At the most, we may modify it and change the stance when things happen, but we don't change our basic stance. We don't take a new stance altogether. Right? So to take up the same thing, there are multiple ways of doing it. Now that aspect of it comes when you are having an open mind, right? Success rarely comes at the first attempt. Nobody succeeds, not everybody succeeds at the first attempt. In fact, when you succeed at the first attempt, you don't have to feel too elated, because it's possible that the success has come because certain factors came together. So when the success happens a number of times after a lot of tribulations, trials and tribulations, that success has got certain type of a background and a flavor, right? Among the most irritating complications in this world are the other people in it, such as the customers. Customers are not always right. Customers lie or they are wrong, quote unquote, by Bob Young. It simply means that people are not what they appear. They may come along and say that this is what we want, this is what we do not want. They may even say that this particular product I took from you failed, but at the end of it, customer may not be always right. There's a universal dictum which says customer is always right. Customer is God to the organization. We have to treat him like God. That's okay, perfect. But we need to take one more stance, saying that the customer need not be always right. Customer need not always be right. Are we trying to say that the customer is wrong? No, we are not saying that. We are just saying that it's possible that the customer has got limited knowledge, or he has taken a different type of view. So we need to correct that. For example, if an angry customer comes and starts shouting and screaming of something that seems to have gone wrong with a device you have sold him, the dictum that says customer is always right will quietly replace that thing for him. Could you go one step further and ask him questions, and you may come to know that probably he has not known how to use the device. Then he comes and screams at you, customer is wrong. Now this comes as a lateral thinking or a integrative thinking. I need to take this stance, right? It's a world where the smartest people don't always have the best ideas. Who are the smart people? Smart means people who project themselves as knowledgeable. People who seem to be having all the general knowledge of the world. They are the first and the last word in any discussion. There are many people who do that. But these are not the guys who always come out with the best solutions. The solutions come from different types of people who are not the smart looking types, who are not the highly qualified types, who are not the highly articulate types. Best inventors, best discoverers, people who do lateral thinking, people who are coming out with fantastic ideas, innovative ideas, need not be people who are looking smart and projecting smartness. That's what this is telling us. If the world's problems are so complex that they defeat even the smartest smart guys, it's no wonder that there are so many mediocre organizations. Let me give another dimension to smart without sounding cynical about anything. Organizations make it a point to hire the best brains from the universities. Toppers. Now, all of us know that the toppers do not really perform well in industry. Not all toppers. These are the smartest guys with high IQs. They perform well in their grades. They are very good in the specialization which they have taken. Everything is good about them. But there's a very high likelihood that these guys do not perform in a multivariate, complex situation like an organization. They may not have skills to relate with people who are ordinary, inverted commas. They may not have the skills to understand certain simple problems because they may be using their complexity of thinking. Specialization. Now, I'm not saying that organizations do not need to hire smart guys, but let's understand that it is not that alone. What is the assumption when I take a topper from a university? The assumption is that he has the requisite IQ, he has the requisite skills to grow and adapt himself in a complex situation. Does it always happen? No. The best performers are not the toppers. So there is some other software. It is not only being a smart guy that matters. It is something else. There's something else. That something else, the smart guys are today learning. The smart guys are learning that particular thing. It's like in a B school, typically, the guys are taken to the hills to show what is survival. And they take many things for granted. And when they are in the hills for 2 or 3 days, going through a trek or an arduous training, walking at night, living in tents and all, they learn certain skills. And they start getting enlightened that this is not what I thought it is something different. Experiential learning, as we call it. Right? So, sooner business people admit this truth, sooner the organizations can improve. Fortunately, in today's world of business, we find that organizations are softening to the fact that academics is not everything. The best of the brands from where the person is working will give the best of the brains. They're realizing it now. And so the parameters of recruiting, hiring is slightly different. They look at the overall person in terms of his academics, plus his adaptability, plus his willingness to learn many things, plus his willingness to be open. Now these skills are being given a lot of importance today, emphasis, right? Don't think you are any good, quote, and don't get defensive about it. It's not something to be embarrassed by, because the odds are no one else is any good either. That's the biggest secret. It simply means there's not one single guy who's the smartest. I am smart in something, but I am dumb in other things. So there's nothing like anybody who's a great guy. Nobody's a great guy. It doesn't mean that everybody's a dumb guy. Everybody has got a combination of A and B and C and D. So I may be good in some aspect of my life. That doesn't entitle me to talk about other aspects of the life. This happens in organizations when somebody rises up to the top level. He becomes an authority on areas where he has got no clue. The CEO of a company must have risen up from the ranks. Let's say in a software company, he's the best software person, the brilliant guy. Now he would be perhaps taking a stance about some major decision to do with some other department which is not his domain at all. And thereby the whole thing goes for a toss. What would he do gracefully? It's good to give it to someone, consult someone, involve someone who's an expert in that field and share the ideas and then take a decision. It's happening in many organizations today. There's a lot of give and take between the higher ups and the people who are operational, because they've realized the importance of involving people and the futility of sitting in their silos in their towers and saying that this is the way it operates. Okay? So, once you know you're not any good, it motivates you to get just a little better tomorrow. And tomorrow you decide to get better day after that. Today all organizations, progressive organizations, are also called as learning organizations. When we say learning, means every organization is laying emphasis, saying that if you become an expert in one area, you've proven yourself, you become a leader in that area, now shift your focus, go to another area where you do not know anything. Multiple skills people are asked to develop. And by developing multiple skills, my attitudes also develop. I start becoming humbler and humbler. Humility is a hallmark of a good leader. Humility is a hallmark of a good leader. So how humble he is, despite his performances, despite his success. For me to get humble, I need to go and choose a profession, choose a skill about which I have no clue. Learn it and develop it. During that time, my factory setting, I'll have to drop it. I'll have to go there fresh, new, and start learning it from the scratch. Now this ability is rare. Only few people seem to be having it. In most cases, when you conduct a training program, you find people are full of themselves with their past. And when they're full of themselves with the past, that stance takes them towards limited learning or practically no learning. And they go out of the training program the way they came in without anything. And in fact, they may get cynical saying that the program is no good, because they are looking at it from their ossified, crystallized stance. Okay? So taking it further, don't worry about criticism, because you're not any good. So criticism is always valid. Nobody can criticize anything about anybody, because everybody has got something about them which is also not clear, right? Money is not the only motivator. You need a drive to accomplish something in the world. One of my fundamental beliefs is I want to create value, he says. It's more important to me to create a value than to make money. Very interesting. If my lecture to you is creating a value, it means that you are deriving something from what I'm saying. It's creating some thought processes and it's going to help you in a very major aspect of your life. It's something you've been looking for, a wow, and it just comes to you. And when it comes to you, it actually starts making you grow. When you grow, you have different thought processes, different ways of looking at life, and so this money automatically follows. The emphasis is on creating value. In marketing, we talk about value versus money, value versus pricing and all that. Now, this value is a little nebulous to understand. A thing is valuable to me when it is dear to me, when I feel that the value actually enhances my self-esteem. If I buy a mobile or if I buy some other merchandise and I feel nice about myself and I feel that it's worth it, I start feeling something good about myself for an period of time, then it's of a high value. Value has not much to do with pricing, but people connected with pricing. I wouldn't elaborate and discuss on that. The only thing I could tell you is that when you see value, you recognize it, pick it up. When you see value, when you recognize it, pick it up. If you don't see value, don't even touch it. If you don't see value, don't touch it. How do you know that you're seeing value? When you see value, you know, yes, this is what I want. And this is exactly what is going to enhance me. This is what is going to make my dimensions of my life grow. That's valuable, right? When combined with learning, motivation is more powerful problem-solving tool than sheer intellect. You can overcome dumbness with motivation, right? Patience. It's a key virtue in a stance. I need to have patience. I need to have a staying power. I need to slowly think and reflect. It's a key virtue along with determination not to jump to conclusions. It allows you to wait, reserve judgment and build data over time. One experience and people become impatient. One experience, they jump to conclusions. Why? Because of factory settings. Suppose I go through one experience with someone, not a good experience. Let me wait. Let me go through one more experience. Let me go to second, third, fourth, fifth. When I go through these experiences, I start realizing, provided I keep an open mind, that my first experience is not the only judgmental way of looking at him. What do? Most of us, we say first impressions last. And there's a lot of people who are trying to make their images happen very well in the first interaction. But if you're one of those wiser people, you'll not look at the first interaction and accept or reject someone. You'll wait for some more experiences, number of experiences, and then you'll say, fine. There's an overall mapping of this person. That's very important. So learn not to jump to conclusions by one experience or two. Wait patiently, right? It prevents you from action until you have mastered what you need to know to carry out your intentions. My core assumption was don't do anything till you don't understand. Now, this is something which is very important in 21st century working, especially in the service sector, I've seen. People jump and jump and jump into action because somebody up there is forcing them, and the person up there who's forcing is being forced by the customer who's somewhere abroad or someplace. Everybody is pushing everybody and everybody is doing things which they don't understand. Many students interact with me. When I ask them, why are you doing this? They don't understand. They just do it. So if you do something which you don't understand, when you get stuck up, you do not know what to do because it's not coming from you. You've just done it robotically, right? Bob Young engages his world then as a motivated and a patient learner. Two things he's emphasizing on: motivation as well as patience. By subduing his impulse to go into the defensive and by committing to improving a little bit every day, he can develop a better understanding of a confusing, complex world in pursuit of his highest goal, that is to create value for the world. Three keywords you can extract from this. One keyword is value. If I want to create value for people, let me use motivation or motivated people. And let me learn to be a patient learner. If these three words are combined together, you'll find that you are a person who's adding value to people and to yourself. Value addition gives you a quality of life. Value addition makes you feel optimistic about life. These two aspects, motivation and patience, they make you go higher and higher without any doubt. Each integrative thinker has his or her stance. Very important thing to understand. We spoke about Bob Young, we spoke about Lee Chin, we spoke about A.J. Lafley, Moses Neimer. All these people are coming from different backgrounds. They have done one common thing called integrative thinking, but their stances are different. Bob Young was looking at his red hat from a stance which was based on his thinking. And then he went on refining the thinking into integration. Then he brought out the Linux system. So each of them has got a different stance. Now you can't go and duplicate somebody else's stance for yourself. It won't work. It'll be an imitation which will not have much of, it'll be shallow. You know, we talked about Isidore Sharp's Four Seasons Hotel. After that format became very successful, there are a lot of other people who from the hotel industry who came out with the same format. But when it is not backed up with the thought process which Isidore Sharp has, those things will flop. Very recently, I went to one such hotel which is a very good brand, and I found that they were actually following everything which Four Seasons follows. Because those people who are running that chain of hotels are having the same thought process. Make sure that your creation is coming from your thought process, not from somebody else's thought process. Because when you duplicate and you get stuck up in a situation or a problem, you don't know how to come out of it. If I create my problem by my thinking, I know how I can come out of it. But if I create a problem with somebody else's thinking, I get stuck up very badly. I get drowned. I get washed away. Right? Lee Chin saw the world as an accepting place that he could, to some degree, shape to his liking. He developed a view of himself as a value investor, and from that view, flowed his motivation to build renowned investment firm, AIC. Piers Handling of the Toronto International Film Festival. Piers Handling's stance was different. He saw himself as a privileged observer in the world full of magnificent films, so privileged to want others to enjoy the movies he loved. If you notice one common thing among all these people, they were very positive about themselves and the mankind. Their stance about themselves and the world was very positive. Their self-esteem was very high. Right? Stance has two things. It has got both two things: individual unique elements and shared cultural and communal aspects. It simply means it talks about the individual and his attributes with which he is growing. Every human being has got his own individuality. So that is his individual unique elements. Between two brothers in the same home, two twins in the same home, both will be individuals to their own thinking. We can't take them for granted. At the same time, since we are in a social milieu, we live in a family, we work in an organization, we belong to a religion, we belong to a sect, a society. So we also carry with us shared cultural and communal aspects. So some part of the background from where I come, social background, some part of me, both of them put together becomes my stance. So my stance is a product of two things: my individual thinking, my individualism, and how this is relating with the society and the various groups to which I belong. Right? Young individually saw himself as, well, a sales guy. Viewed from the other angles, the engineers in the army of open source software revolutionaries were his comrades. Which means, Young could look at himself from two angles. I'm a sales guy and just be done with it. He said, look, let's have an expansive view. Mine is an army of engineers, software engineers, who are working on open source software, and they are revolutionaries. They're going to come out with something new. You know, it's like looking at my people as energizing engineers. While I'm talking to you, I can look at this particular task as just another video, just another video shoot. On the other hand, if I say that, wow, this is something exciting, let's see how I can push and add value to the viewers and the listeners. Let's see how best we can add dimension to the people who are going to be seeing it off track. If I start looking at an expanded dimension, the way the delivery comes can be felt by you as different, right? Stance. Young's stance derived in part from his association with the sales guys and in part with his industry and temporal association with the pioneers of an open source movement. Two things combined in his stance. One is he as a salesperson, his association with the salespeople. Second is he chose to understand temporal means time related. For a certain time, he was associated with the industry to which he belonged of the open source movement. So the combination of these two things is influenced his stance. He could have chosen to be looking at himself only as a sales guy, or he could have seen the second part of it, but he took both. Right? Now, our stance we often take for granted. I mentioned this earlier. You don't even know that you're having a stance like that. You take it for granted. But even when we take our stance for granted, it guides us in making sense of the world around us and taking action on the basis of that sense making. Whatever you may think about your stance, whether you at all think about your stance, ultimately realize one thing: your stance is taking you towards your life. Your stance is taking you towards your life. Very, very clear. If your life is working, if your experiences are positive, fantastic, the stance is good. But if experiences are not good, go back to the tools which are an outcome of the stance. Because I think like this, this happens. Because I take this stance, I think like this. And because I think like this, I'm getting these experiences. So, if I am not aware of my stance, the first step is learn to become aware of the stance. How to get aware of the stance? Look at the results in your life. Look at what's happening or not happening. Whatever happens or doesn't happen in your life is your making. You may blame the world. At the end of it, ask yourself, go backwards, ask yourself a question. Which part of my thinking, which part of my stance is making these results happen or not happen? Initially, you may not get answers. Ponder over it. You may need a coach to open you up. Somebody who's going to shake you up and make you realize, hey, change your stance. It's quite an uphill task for many people. But when you are open to the fact that I want positive experiences, I want results, and when you know what you want, then you know how to address your stance. In fact, because we are so often unconscious of our stance and the assumptions about the world that flow from it, its guidance is all the more powerful and all the more difficult to resist or divert. It is a habit which you're into, right?